Chicago Sports Conversation is now.
Got a monkey. It was a little woolly monkey. Her name was Gidget. She wore Pampers, and she would swing around, and she was like part of the family.
The Beat.
Ingram to bat the ball away. Williams could tie it with a three. He does!
Chicago Bears. Tear them this way.
Chipmunks, maybe. Bears, never.
On 720 WGN.
And welcome into the Beat here on a Saturday afternoon / evening. Andy Mazur joined by Harry Tynowitz. And you know it's bad when your head coach of your football team is in his press conference before a game against a winless team and you're talking about your monkey.
You know, if you're a head coach in the NFL and you're talking about your monkey, you either coach the very best team in the league or one of the worst teams in the league.
And so far we've got the latter.
We've got the ladder, and I didn't know you could have like a monkey as a pet.
Well, you know, this is back when he was. He talked about this yesterday that he was 11. They were driving back from a holiday party that his grandparents, I guess, threw in the Keys,
uh-huh.
And he was driving. They were driving back up, and they went to a pet store and bought a monkey.
Oh, you never buy a pet from a pet store.
No, but I mean,
doesn't everybody know that? Like a fish, I think, is the only pet you'd buy from a pet store.
Yeah, but this is a while ago, and. I mean, the continuing saga of the monkey they named Gidget, his mom named the monkey.
There's a reference for anybody born after 1955, you can go ahead and Google that.
Google Sally Field, Gidget, and you'll get your right answer there. But, that dominated the press conference yesterday. I suppose, you know, when you get to the point where you're 4-10, you've got a snowstorm impending tomorrow, you've got a fan base that's pretty much checked out. You've got a team that's pretty much checked out. What else you can talk about?
It is a team that is just, you know, the Bulls, the White Sox, they seem to have a plan. Now, the Bulls are screwing up that plan by winning, you know, but what Rick Hahn and the Sox have done is great. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
You know, the Sox have a plan. We're going to do what the Astros just did, what the Cubs did.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bulls had that same plan until, you know, Nico came alive.
And they went 7 in a row.
Right. Nico showed up looking like Schwarzenegger and Terminator. And, you know, now they're going to, like, screw up their great draft pick. But the Bears, like, their plan wasn't to do this. Their plan was to win. And don't you just feel like Cleveland is going to beat the Bears tomorrow?
I do. I mean, I predicted a 17-14 Bears win because I was thinking about the impending snow that's supposed to come tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, Ted Nugent's going to kick a field goal to win it at the end. I'm having flashbacks of the game in Buffalo last weekend.
That was great. I love football in the snow.
Or was that 2 weekends ago? I can't even remember. But it's going to be ugly.
And the Browns are 0-14.
So the fact is that the last two games that the Cleveland Browns have won,
yes,
have come on Christmas Eve.
They have come Christmas Eve, week 16. Just so they win about once a year.
They're averaging once a year. The combined records of these two teams going into this game is 4-24.
Is that good?
Or no, 4-14. Sorry.
Is that good?
Yeah, no, it's not good.
You know, Sean Kizer looks terrible. And, you know, and the Browns last year, they could have drafted Carson Wentz, refused to draft Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
This year, they could have drafted Deshaun Watson. They could have traded up for Mitch Trubisky, who's a Cleveland kid.
Exactly.
Although Mark Carmen would tell you he's not a Cleveland kid. He's a kid from a suburb of Cleveland, but he's not a Cleveland kid.
Yeah.
But
Carmen's not a Chicagoan then.
Right. He's not. Okay. He's from Highland Park,
correct,
which is like on its own island, I guess.
Exactly.
But the Bears, it's so hard to get fired up for the game, and I don't want to be one of these Bears fans that cheers for the team to lose, but that's kind of like, it makes more sense to cheer for them to go 4-12 and have a higher draft pick.
Get a better draft pick and, you know, figure out what the plan actually is.
Yes, and if you're John Fox, if your last name is Fox, wouldn't you want to get a pet fox, not a pet monkey?
Well, that's a good point. I think that would be a little cliche, though.
I guess. But don't monkeys, like, I don't want to get into, like, gross stuff, but, like, aren't monkeys known for...
They fling stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, not the most pleasing aroma of stuff that they fling.
So what kid talks their parents into that? Hey, can we get a pet that flings stuff?
Yeah. John Fox actually talked his parents into it. I mean, the only monkey I think about is when you remember Friends, right? With Marcel the monkey.
Yeah.
That's the only time I've ever really known of anybody that's had a pet monkey.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you can have a pet monkey.
You're not really supposed to have a pet monkey.
No, no, no. You can't have a pet monkey. You're stupid. You do that.
But, you know, the other thing that struck me out of that press conference, and you and I talked about this before we came on the air today, is the old cliche when you got a grumpy guy that comes in and basically is kind of gruff with the media, kind of sees the light at the end of the tunnel that, yeah, this is probably not going to work out real well for me come the Monday after the regular season ends. They always learn how to say hello when it's time to say goodbye.
They do. They want to be remembered in somewhat of a positive light. And, you know, it happens a lot with athletes that, mm-hmm. that are sort of jerkish to the media. Like Steve Carlton's first guy that pops in my head. Yeah. Steve Carlton was an awesome pitcher. And, you know, he pitched for some bad teams and would be like, you know, 20 games over 500 for a very, very bad team. But he was kind of a jerk to the media. But in his last, like, year, like at the last month of the last year, he was like everybody's best friend. Because who votes for the Hall of Fame?
I was going to say, he wanted to get
right.
in the Hall.
Right. So I don't know what John Fox wants, but he won't be the Hall of Fame. He's been a very, very good coach.
Yeah.
He just clearly is not, you know, capable of being the head coach of the Bears right now, and they will move on.
The one thing I will give him credit for.
Yes.
He has not lost the locker room. From all indications and all reports around Halas Hall and in Lake Forest, that's the one thing he hasn't lost. He hasn't lost the locker room, which is, you know, it's irrelevant what we think.
Right.
It's irrelevant what the fans think at that point. It's more of like, can I get these guys still to play and buy into what I'm doing here, at least for the last two games? And you get the sense that, you know, they're still on board. But it's not very good.
The last guy lost the locker room, Trestman.
Oh, he did. He never had the locker room.
He never had the locker room. He has Canadian locker rooms.
And he just goes out and wins Grey Cups.
Yeah. Maybe he could be a hockey coach.
He can win the Grey Cup, the Stanley Cup.
Oh, yeah. He loves cups.
Yeah. It's good. It's Red Solo Cups, too. He could win, too.
Yeah, the guy that invented Red Solo Cups recently died.
Oh, it's a shame.
Yeah, I hope they marked his casket.
They had a game of beer pong on his casket.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Where would we be without Red Solo Cups?
I don't know. And they're making blue ones now, too.
Why?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I don't know. All the colors. You can get them all.
My world is rocked.
So let's see. In the first 15 minutes of the show, we've covered Red Solo Cups and monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So that bodes well for the rest of the show, doesn't it?
It's better than talking about the Bears.
We're going to add some soup to our show as well.
We have Brian Campbell
coming up. Brian Campbell's going to come on after the 4:30 news. We'll talk a little bit about the Blackhawks and a little stumble in Dallas the other day. Patrick Sharp back in the lineup today, skating with the top line.
How about that? You go from being a healthy scratch to being, you know, on the ice with Taser and Sot.
Yeah. So Vinny Hinostroza, the man, the odd man out in the lineup today, the healthy scratch.
And an early start for the Blackhawks. We will be circumcised tonight at 5:30. Chris Bowden comes on board with the pregame, and then 6 o'clock, John and Troy and John from New Jersey, where I went to a Devils game.
You did?
And when you get ice cream there, if you ask for it, you might ask for it with a bonnet. Do you know what a bonnet is?
I don't.
I don't know if that's an East Coast thing, if it's a New Jersey Devils thing.
Okay.
A bonnet is when you want chocolate sauce on your ice cream.
A little topping, the
yeah,
bonnet. Thing,
yeah.
You know, like a little cap or something like that on your head. Yeah.
So what the hell is that, Jersey?
Yeah, I don't know.
And Jersey's pretty cool. Bruce comes from Jersey.
Yeah.
Sinatra, you know,
Sinatra.
Bon Jovi came from Jersey. You know, but now, you know, the late, great James Gandolfini was a Jersey guy.
Well,
just say you want a chocolate sauce,
yeah,
you know, fudge.
Put it on top, yeah.
Don't say bonnet.
Drizzle it. Don't bonnet it.
Right, right, right. And New Jersey, by the way, they're excellent this year.
Yeah. They're having a good season. They've always been known for defense and goalie and goaltending. That's
right.
The old Martin Brodeur days, but of course those are over.
Right. And also you think Devils, don't you think Seinfeld?
You think Putty.
Putty.
Yeah.
Face painting. It's a classic Seinfeld episode. Devils!
Ah! Yeah. So we'll get to Soup Campbell a little bit later on. We'll also talk a little bit about those Chicago Bulls that, ran off 7 straight after a bunch of turmoil. After a 10-game losing streak, they're the first team in NBA history to win 7 in a row after losing 10 in a row.
Ever.
Talk about an uneven season.
Yeah, and they almost beat Cleveland.
They should have beaten Cleveland.
They were right there. And you know, and it's... It's just so weird. Maritich punched, got punched by Portis,
yep.
Broke his jaw. The two have still not talked off the court. But on the court, they're like giving each other the, hey, nice play by you.
Yeah.
No, 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 my man, nice play by you.
It's the Roadrunner and Coyote. That's what it is. At work, they're you know, they get along.
Roadrunner and Coyote don't work together.
Well, I mean, they kind of work. Oh, no, it was the sheepdog. The sheepdog and the wolf that when they punched the clock, they were enemies at work and they were good friends afterwards.
I don't remember the sheepdog.
Yeah, the little it was a cartoon. It was a Looney Tunes, I think.
I don't. I know all the cartoons. I don't remember. I remember like Peter Potamus.
Yeah. Well, you're looking at me like I'm a Looney Tunes right now.
Oh, I
a
little bit.
That's okay.
But I bet you know. I don't. I'm mad at myself for not knowing. I kind of know the cartoon, but I don't know it. I need a name. I need like a Hearty Har Har. I need like a Yippee Yappy Yahooey.
The Hippo Hurricane Holler.
Oh, that was so good. Peter Potamus had the Hippo Hurricane Holler.
It's good stuff.
Yes, and also we lost a sports broadcasting icon.
We did.
Late last night, who 28 Wimbledons and the greatest game ever played in college basketball, did a ton of Final Fours,
mm-hmm.
and most Chicagoans will think of him as the guy that had the Bears' greatest Super Bowl ever, Super Bowl 20,
yep.
Bears 46 to 10, Bears. Dick Enberg, yep. And I know that you know Dick Enberg from your days when you were behind the mic for the Padres.
Mm-hmm. Had the honor of actually filling in for him for about 40 or 45 games.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about him.
Yes. And I have, if I may, for 1 second,
yeah, go ahead.
I've you know how like you make friends with you know, some of your friends' parents and stuff like that? So yesterday, the longtime mayor of Steger, longtime guy, mayor of Steger, Lou Simmons, celebrated his 90th birthday. He put the Gurr in Steger. And, you know, anybody that makes it to 90, we love them. But Lou is a special cat. He always looked out for other people. Very, very good husband and a track star as a youth.
Nice.
Yes. He had a 4 minute mile. I think he was running from some cops, but he had a 4 minute mile. So happy birthday, Lou.
Happy birthday, Lou. Happy 90th. And by the way, happy Festivus.
It is Festivus Day.
It's a Festivus for the rest of us today.
Time for the airing of the grievances.
We'll have the feats of strength coming up a little bit later.
There's two Seinfeld references in the first 19 minutes.
The aluminum pole is being brought in as we speak. Tinsel is very distracting,
mm-hmm.
so we can't have any tinsel.
It's a six-letter word.
312-981-7200 is the phone number, also our text line. We'll get to more of our show here in just a moment. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 on WGN-TV. Welcome back to The Beat, 720 WGN. Andy Mazur along with Terry Tynowitz. We'll take you up to Blackhawks hockey tonight at 5:30. Hawks and the New Jersey Devils from Jersey at 5:30. Chris Bowden has your pregame show. And then coming up at 6, it's John and Troy. And they'll have the call for you.
Yeah, and the Hawks need this game. They were terrible in Dallas.
They were not good.
They played so well recently. They went on a bit of a roll. Would you say it'd be a good time for the Hawks to go on a roll? Yes, they went on a bit of a roll. It's a very good conference, the Western Conference. And flat on their face against Big Ben Bishop in Dallas Thursday night.
If Patrick Kane gets that little tap in that doesn't hit the post, it's a different game.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Because they had control of that first period. They were out shooting the Stars. It was almost like 2-1.
Right. And, you know, it's my friends from out of town are telling me how old my team is. My favorite hockey team, they're telling me how old Seabrook looks and how old Sharp looks. So this would be a really good game. Sharp skating with, you know, two of the most talented players that you could find on this roster.
Yeah.
And I would hope Patrick Sharp, who has like one goal in 5 weeks, 6 weeks, hope he can light the lamp tonight.
Has not been a good season for Patrick Sharp. Brent Seabrook's been a little slow, but hey, there's some young defensemen, and we're going to talk to Brian Campbell about that coming up after the 4:30 news. We've been talking about the Bears a little bit. We've been talking about the Bulls a little bit. Baseball season, you know, is the other day I saw something on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So this is probably like 3 or 4 days ago. So now it has to be revised, but it was 100 days until opening day. So it's probably like 95 now.
It's close. It's coming.
I walked out of the building here to go across the street to the coffee place,
uh-huh.
and I just have my sweatshirt on, and it's cold.
It is cold. It's 20 tomorrow at kickoff for the Bears, 25 and snow.
Okay, so how many no-shows are there going to be?
There will be, I'm saying there's going to be, I really think that there could be 20,000 no-shows tomorrow.
I was going to say that might be, now if it snows before the game starts, I think the number will be higher.
Like a 9 a.m. snow?
I think it's like it's an early snow. Yeah, like a pre-tailgating snow.
Yeah, if you get it early enough, that'll turn people away.
Because you don't want to tailgate in, you know, 2 or 3 inches of snow.
No, and I mean, I love the Bears. I do too.
I mean, I'm not rooting against them. It's gotten to the point where something has to change.
It really does, and it's kind of like the best way that fans can send a message to the McCaskies.
That's the only way they can send a message.
Is we're not coming. But they did it last year, and nothing happened.
You know, it was brought up yesterday or the day before on I was filling in on Steve Cochran's show in the morning. We had Dan Hampton on, another name dropper right there.
Uh-huh. Hamp is awesome,
and he brought up an excellent point. I mean, because of the fact that you know we've seen in this town teams become irrelevant. The Blackhawks were irrelevant for a long time.
Blackhawks had about a 9-year stretch where
nobody cared.
You could go up to the window and get 4 seats anywhere in the stadium, including the Hawks bench.
Yeah. Rocky Wirtz, John McDonough, Jay Blunk saved the day. They come in, they swoop in.
So great.
They draft great. Dale Talon and Stan Bowman do a great job of drafting and developing some young prospects, and they're the faces of your franchise right now, and the Hawks are feeling good. This is a Bears town. No matter what happens, the Hawks win Stanley Cups, the Bulls win NBA championships, the Cubs win the World Series, the White Sox win the World Series. This is still a Bears town.
Right.
Because all those fans are fans of the Bears.
And the Bears will never be irrelevant, but there was somebody, I was out this morning with about 40 friends, and there were, somebody had 2 tickets for the Bears game, and I saw them offer the tickets to about 15 different people.
And nobody wants them.
And nobody wanted them. Bears tickets. Nobody wanted them.
It's amazing to me. And I just don't understand, or I don't know if the message that we've talked about here gets through to the McCaskey family, because there's a certain point you reach where you start to think nothing can hurt me, nothing can bother me. We're this franchise. We're the charter franchise of the National Football League. No matter what we do, people are going to come out and they're going to watch us and they're going to cheer for us. And I get that, because sometimes it's ingrained in your head so much that's the only way you think. But any more of this for a sustained period of time, we're talking 3 straight 10-plus losses seasons.
Right. And you know, Ted Phillips McCaskey is a guy that you can point the finger at and say, okay, he's not a McCaskey, yet he's making, like, the football decisions. What's going on there?
Yeah, and I thought when Ryan Pace came in, you know, being as young and somewhat inexperienced.
Coming from a successful, very successful organization, the Saints.
And structure within the organization. Now, you know, things started to change a little bit when Jerry Angelo came in. There was football guys trying to make football decisions. And, you know, you think that that's the way things are going now. Is Ryan Pace kind of, you know, you wonder if he's just laying in the weeds right now, waiting to the fact that he can get his own coach in now. He doesn't have to use John Fox.
Right, the guy who was there when he got there.
Right, and now things start to come together because you don't want to waste your best stuff on a guy that you don't really want to be there.
Well, yeah, Pace isn't going anywhere. Pace will be there, and Pace will bring in his own guy. And, you know, I read 2 different lists today of offensive coordinators that are there, and I didn't see either one of the guys that, you know, that I thought should be coming in. And, you know, you look at the Rams and the success they've had with a 31-year-old offensive coordinator. So I think, A, you want an offensive coordinator because mm-hmm. the most important guy on the team is Mitch Trubisky.
Because Dowell Loggins is not the guy.
Right. And, B, you want an offensive coordinator because you've had a defensive-minded coach. So they've got to get, we both agree, mm-hmm. got to get an offensive-minded coach. And the Frank Reich, who's you know calling the shots in Philly,
right. under former Buffalo quarterback,
he's got the greatest comeback in college football history and the greatest comeback in the NFL history.
Poor Houston Oilers,
and you don't want to know what that game cost me.
No, actually, I don't.
No, that was a horrible Sunday afternoon.
I don't want to know, because that was
35-3 at the half.
That was one of the craziest games ever.
And people I know that know Frank Reich say he'd be a great head football coach.
Yeah, as long as it's not the name that surfaced earlier in the week, and that was Jeff Fisher, who said he wants to get back in. And now
can you imagine?
And now is taking credit for what the Rams are doing.
Taking credit? He was holding him back.
He thinks that he left it in good shape.
He was holding him back.
Yeah. And this is a Bear, a former Bear that I hold a lot of reverence for.
Guppy.
Because of what he did on the field and what he was able to do off the field when he got into coaching.
Go to number 24.
But you had nothing to do with what's going on there right now.
No.
Nothing to do. All right, we'll take a quick time out. We'll get you into the newsroom here in just a few moments, and then after the news, we'll welcome in Brian Campbell, former Blackhawk defenseman, and actually kind of celebrating an anniversary of sorts I was alerted to. We'll get into that with him as well. We're going to leave you hanging a little bit on that
nice
one.
Nice tease. All that right. is the definition of a tease.
There you go. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Forsling down the left wing into the star zone. He fires a wrist shot in on goal. Bishop with an kneeling save. Connor Murphy from the high slot fires. Oh, and a save by Bishop. Rebound. Kane poking at it. And Bishop laying on his side. Put the glove on top of the puck in the crease. Denying Patrick Kane his 300th NHL goal.
We had a couple really good looks in the first period. Those two looks at head post. Could have put us in a better spot, but I just thought we really lost a lot of gas when they did score. We needed something like that to get us excited.
Welcome back to The Beat, 720 WGN. Andy Mazur sitting alongside Harry Tynowitz. Of course, those are the dulcet tones of one John Weideman. Making the call there on the Hawks 4-0 loss to the Dallas Stars. Back at it tonight.
Yeah, bad game, but you get it. It's a good thing that, two nights later, you get a chance to just wash that taste out of your mouth.
Absolutely right. Let's talk some more Blackhawks, and let's welcome in former Hawk defenseman Brian Campbell. And, Subi, thanks for taking the time. And first of all, you did a great job filling in for Troy the other night.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I was, first period felt like it was over in about 2 minutes, but I think I found a way to get through it. So it was fun to do something to challenge myself and, obviously, Troy is one of the better guys that does it around the league, so it's an honor to fill in for him.
Soup, it's an honor to have you on the radio. Really, it's
Harry, how you doing?
Emotionally, very, very much living a lie, but otherwise, I'm doing very good. So, like, when you're part of the post game and you ask Taser a question and he's laughing because like you're asking the question, how does that make you feel?
It feels good. It's a little hard to ask him a question at some time, so. I find it pretty funny, but he knows I got to do my job, and I'm sorry, I got my kids crying here. So
that's
he knows
okay.
I'm trying to do a good job. So that's all I'm trying to get through.
Well, it's great because I mean they love you. You belong in the Blackhawk family. I'm so glad you're still part of the organization, and those guys will be very real with you.
Yeah, they are, and I still talk to them off the ice and see them. So you know they're doing some good work. They're playing some good hockey. I know last game didn't go the way they wanted, but they've kind of found themselves a little bit more, and hopefully they can finish the Christmas break off good tonight.
Let's talk about some of the young D-men on this team because I think going in, when you trade Nicholas Hjalmarsson, a guy of his caliber, I think fans kind of scratched their head a little bit, and I think Stan Bowman had a plan with some of these young guys. Gustav Forsling is one guy that kind of stands out to me. Just what are your impressions of him so far?
Yeah, he's been, he got a little taste of it last year, and now he's, kind of got off to a slow start, and now he's really got into feeling pretty good about himself, and I think the coaching staff's helped him along the way that way. So I think he can be a very good player for a long time, and the Hawks have needed him to step up and play more minutes, and I think he's played better that way even, and he's very poised with the puck and in a lot of areas. So he's one piece that has kind of stepped up with losing Hjalmarsson, and I think it's an important piece for them. He was logging a lot of minutes, and I think there's more offensive upside to his game, and hopefully he can continue to grow on that. So he's a really good kid, so he deserves it. He's worked hard, and I think him and Ruta have played a lot early on in the season, and maybe they'll get back together again tonight. And kind of been a shutdown pairing for that team, and it's probably what you didn't expect going into it. So I think Stan obviously had some question marks going into the season, but he put some good faith into those guys, and now he's getting rewarded.
You played under Coach Q, and just how difficult is it for, especially for a young D-man, to kind of understand what it is that Coach expects of you?
Well, it's just I think every coach expects a lot from their players and expects the best, but it's it's how cute. He kind of plays a little bit of a different defensive system. And I truly believe that it's a better defensive system just because there's a lot less movement and thinking going on. There's a few ways of playing it that he wants you to play. And once you get a grasp of that, you'll have success. And, you know, I see Connor Murphy coming in here, and he's played in Arizona, and it's been a huge difference for him to come in. And finally, he didn't have to think on the ice anymore. He could just read and react because he understood the system and got used to it. So even when I came back last year, it was almost like learning a new system for me, and I had played here before. So those are the challenges that you have, but you know, I know everybody gives Joel and says he's not good with young players, but he's certainly been developing the players that are good enough to play in this league all throughout these years and having a lot of success with them. So I think that's a great example. And now I feel like Connor Murphy's really, really stepped up his game and has been really solid and physical for the hockey club.
Soup, other than putting 51 on the point, what can the Blackhawks do to beef up this 28th ranked power play?
Well, it's been getting some better times of late. I know they haven't scored, but I've liked what they've done. They've been generating more shots on it. And, you know, I think the power play has been a struggle. It's not going to climb up. Like, you could go on a pretty good run, and you're not going to climb up a whole lot now. Just because you're almost getting closer to halfway through the season and you're still ranked there. So, but they can have success out of it. And I think they kind of went back to their units that they used to have a couple years ago. And they've had, last game they only had the one opportunity, but the game before that they had, I think three opportunities, and they probably had about, you know, six scoring chances. So there's not a whole lot else you can ask from a power play. Except for generating scoring chances and hopefully, you know, a little puck luck, they'll get it. So I do like where they're headed. I didn't like where they were at for a while there. And early in the season, I felt like they weren't gaining a lot of momentum or chemistry through it. But I feel like the chemistry has come the last few games with the different units.
You know, there's a lot of reason to think that the Hawks are going to be, you know, a big factor come playoff time. And there's a couple of young guys that are very exciting to watch. DeBrincat has you know, been very good. He started out kind of slow, but then he poured a bunch of goals in the net. And Schmaltz is making passes that, like, I couldn't make if it were floor hockey and there was no one else on the floor with me. You got to like these two young players if you're a Hawk fan, right?
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit, Harry, but that's my opinion. But I think you could make those passes if nobody was out there playing floor hockey. But
no, I'm talking nobody out there. If they had, like, chairs out there, the chairs would, like, block me from making my stick-to-stick, tape-to-tape pass.
Well, maybe, but with those players, you know, I think with Schmaltz, I think it's a case if you want to find a little bit more consistency out of his game. And he's got all the tools. It's just on a nightly basis, it's kind of what you're getting. And he can have a lot of consistency with his game. And sorry, my kids keep trying to run in here. But he can find a lot of consistency with his game. So, and then with the DeBrincat, I think he's getting moved back down to the third line. And I think he's going to have a little bit more success there than playing up on the top line, because he can find a way to have the puck a little bit more. And he seems like he can really make his center and wingers better. So, you know, hopefully we'll see him tonight in that area. And hopefully, you know, he can have the puck on his stick a little bit more. And I think that's when he makes his teammates a lot better, is when he has control and he's kind of the point person on his line.
Do you remember that British guy, Professor Robert Kelly, on the BBC, who was being interviewed, and his little kids kept coming into his office? That's what this is like. Soup's got the little kids.
Yeah, thank you for that. They never want me any other time of the day, but apparently they want to be around me right now.
I get it. Hey, the Devils don't suck right now. Taylor Hall, Edmonton, never really reached his potential. Now he's flying around the ice. What happened?
I've watched him play. He's always had the tools. I think it was just more of, you know, I think he was always just trying to be an individual all the time and not play as a team. And I looked at him now, and, you know, he's got, I think, 11 goals. And for him, it was always him having a lot of goals and not a lot of assists. But he's got over 20 assists on the year. And he seems to kind of finally come into his own with his game and having the success and using his teammates instead of just relying on his the way he plays with his speed. And he's figuring out that there's more speed to the game, or two different speeds that you can change things up. So I think for him, it's been that's how he's found some success. And I think with the other guys, they got a lot of guys that we never heard of. They played in at the United Center earlier this season, and they had a lot of success because they have a lot of speed. And I think that's going to be that's why they're having so much success, is the game has turned into such a fast game, and that's, you know, where they're excelling, and it's surprising a lot of teams.
Brian Campbell, kind enough to join us here on the Beat 720 WGN. And again, another long road trip for this team. It's not quite what the circus trip back in your day used to be like, but what are these long road trips like for a player? And is it beneficial in some respects that you guys can just kind of get away from things and hang out together?
Well, the problem with the road trips, and I know I've talked to the players, and you see it, is I know it's a long road trip, but it's all chopped up and they're coming home. And so, you know, I think now they come home for the Christmas break after tonight's game, and then they head back out west. So where before you went and you completed all those 6 or 7 game road trips at one time. So, you know, I know it's been tough on the players this year because they're going out for a lot of 1 day trips and then back home. And that's what you found a lot this season. So, yes, they are on the road for a while, but I think it's been a tough challenge for the players that have been used to these, you know, your 2 long trips where you played your 12 road games on those 2 trips and you got a bulk of your road games out of the way. So I think it's been definitely a challenge for the Blackhawks this year by they're playing a lot more 1 game road trips, which, you know, makes you feel like you're always jumping on an airplane and going from hotel a little bit and then back home. So you don't have as long stretches at home to feel a little bit more comfortable and get that relaxation a little bit.
So Monday morning, what does a Brian Soup Campbell hope to find waiting for him under his Christmas tree?
Well, Monday morning, wow. I don't need a whole lot. I got a lot going on. It's going to be about the kids and my 2 girls and what they got coming underneath the tree. So I think that'll be the exciting part, to see their smiles on their faces. So they're all been excited, as you can tell, and Elf on the Shelf has been roaming around the house and
nice
and finding different hiding spots. So yeah, we have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old girl, so they're going to be pretty excited. We just made some cookies for Santa today, and we're getting all ready for Monday morning.
You know, Andy and I are going to be asking listeners their favorite sports-related holiday gift they ever got. Is there one? I know you grew up a big sports fan. Is there like one that sticks out in your memory that you know, that Santa brought or someone in your family got you? Your favorite sports holiday gift?
Well, for me, it was always about hockey, obviously. And I know I remember I still got this hockey bag. I still remember it clean as day, and I basically almost sat in there the whole day. I was small enough that I could eat inside my hockey bag. So I was building forts, or I was going down and getting dressed in my hockey equipment in the basement, and then I'd be putting it back into my bag and then getting redressed again. And, you know, that's the best part about it, is just enjoying those times as a kid. And no worries in the world, obviously, at that point in your life. So, you know, anything hockey related was always special, but I'll never forget that hockey bag I got.
Hey, Sue, before we let you go, we were kind of teasing the audience about the fact that you have a little bit of an anniversary coming up here. It's been almost 10 years since you played in that outdoor game at Ralph Wilson Stadium, and you actually scored the first goal for the Sabres.
Yeah, it's been interesting, and obviously Buffalo's playing again at, I think it's City Field where the Mets play, so you know, it's been a special thing, as Blackhawks fans know as well, the Winter Classics. And for us that day, it was, we didn't know anything we were walking into. There was no publicity about it. There was no HBO or NHL Network show. There was no memorabilia being sold previous to the game. You walk in and they're like, oh, there's sweaters for sale if you want them. We're like, whoa, what do they just have black, or do they just have Sabre emblems on them, or what are they? So it was kind of the guinea pig time of it for us. And we walked in there, and obviously the weather and the snow globe effect really resonated with a lot of people. And, you know, it was nice to be able to do that in Buffalo with sports fans that are great. A lot like, you know, the Chicago scene with how good Chicago is as sports fans. So it was exciting. It was a fun time. And, you know, it's something that I can always hang my hat that I got to score a goal in the first outdoor classic game. So I'm looking forward to watching this year's as well.
Well, Soup, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. Happy holidays to you and your family. And let's go Blackhawks tonight, huh?
Yeah, I can't wait to watch. It should be a good game, and hopefully they can grab 2 points.
Hey, those cookies will be gone by the second intermission tonight.
Yeah, I might be digging into them now.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Thanks, Soup. You're awesome.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You got it. Brian Campbell joining us, former Blackhawks defenseman, and he's got a real good grasp on things. I like the way he explains things. He's so recently removed from being a player, it's just kind of easy to kind of fall back into that.
It's just something that the Hawks have done. Adam Burrish is with the club, you know, Jamal Myers with the club, very active. And of course, Jamerson's a former Hawk who's been with them for a while. But it's, you know, the Hawks kind of get it. They kind of get it. You know, it's about the community and it's really cool. So for Brian Campbell, it was a hockey bag
that he sat in.
Yeah.
He was small enough to be able to sit inside the bag.
Yeah, so what about you guys?
Yeah, Harry and I were talking about this too, and just trying to figure out you know, the best holiday gift sports related, whether it be tickets, whether it be, you know, a jersey or something like that. Do you remember? Give us a call or shoot us a text. 312-981-7200 is our phone number and our text number. 312-981-7200. Be interested to talk to you folks about that, especially with the holiday season in full gear right here on Michigan Avenue. There's no matter how cold it is, there's people walking around and walking by and waving to us and getting some last minute shopping done. It's always good to see. Take a quick time out here on the beat and come back with more 720 WGN. This is the beat. Andy Mazur sitting alongside Harry Tynowitz, taking your phone calls and your text at 312-981-7200. Best sports related holiday gift you ever received. Get this one from the 815. When I was eighth grade, me and my girlfriends all got tennis rackets for Christmas. Went out and played tennis in the street with snow on the ground.
They
don't have a major tournament with snow, right? It's clay and grass usually.
Yeah, there's no snow. You know, I didn't think this was possible. Only a 90-minute show today because of the Hawks game. Karm is not here, and there's tennis talk. Damn. Is that from Karm?
Unless he changed his phone number.
He might. You know he's got a burner phone.
He's got burners all over the place. Yeah,
for other things.
He's out of the country, too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was asked to leave. What about you, Andy? Is there one that sticks out in your mind?
Well, my holiday list used to consist of the Sears catalog. So basically, my brother and I would use different colored pens, and we would circle different things, and my parents would notice some of them. And the one thing I had circled, and I want to say I was maybe 8 or 9, was a full, with pads, Bears jersey.
Oh, that'd be great when you're 8 or 9.
And it came with the number 55.
Really?
Doug Buffon.
Really? That's pretty cool.
Came with Doug Buffon's number on it. It wasn't the authentic, even, you know, the correct lettering or anything like that.
Doesn't matter.
Which drove me nuts even back then, because I'm all about the authentic.
Right.
But it had the helmet, chin strap, it had shin pads, it had thigh pads.
Shin pads?
Yeah, it had everything.
Shin pads.
Well, yeah, I meant thigh pad. The thigh pads.
The thigh pads.
Yeah, and it had the big shoulder pads.
Did it have a cup?
The platinum. It did not. Because the plastic helmet, I remember reading, says, is not for competitive play.
Right. Is for potato chip holding.
So what my brother and I did, of course, was go outside and see if we could bash each other's heads in. He got a Vikings jersey somehow, and he's never been a Vikings fan in his entire life. I think it might have been a misorder from the Sears catalog.
Well, that's even more reason to go out there and pound them. So what was it, like a Wally Hilgenberg?
It was a 77. I think that was Gary Larson. Scott Studwell, too. The former Illini guy.
Yeah. I want to say Studwell was 55. Okay. Not sure. But back then, the Vikings had, the Purple People Eater defense.
Correct, with Alan Page.
And, right, Alan Page, Eller, and Marshall. And not to geek out, but 80, 70, 81. But Gary Larson was the fourth guy.
Yeah.
And he was number 77. That's awesome.
He was like the fifth guy on the Fab Five.
Yes. Yes.
That nobody can remember.
King?
Yeah.
Was that who that
was? Jimmy King, right?
Jimmy King. Yeah. That's pretty cool. So what did you get?
Yeah.
What sports-related gift did you get from at the holidays? Dan Long?
Dan Long?
Executive producer?
What do you got for us?
I've got one that I'll tease for after the news.
All right.
Well, but you might appreciate this.
Okay. All right. So this is the big – you just came out to tell us you're going to tease that you're going to give us the information after the news. Okay. And I might appreciate it. So we could go several thousand different directions on this.
Could be anything.
Exactly. I mean, this is like potluck right here. All right, let's take a quick time out, then we'll get you into the newsroom and more of the beat coming up here on 720 WGN.
This is my kingdom come. This is
now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
Final 30 minutes on the beat here tonight before we make way for Blackhawks hockey, Blackhawks and the New Jersey Devils. Chris Bowden standing by upstairs on the seventh floor. He'll have the pregame show for you, 6 o'clock face-off with John and Troy here on WGN.
I think it's so cool that Bowden does the shows in full hockey uniform.
Yeah, you know, he has to take the mask off every once in a while, the visor, you know, because he's a visor guy.
Mm-hmm. Mike Visor.
He's a good old number one.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fighter, too. You know that. He drops the gloves at the... You go up there and say anything that's out of turn, gloves are dropped.
See, to you, he's a fighter. To me, he'll always be a lover.
Okay, I'm not sure where to go from there, but let's go back to Dan Long, who has been standing by so patiently and diligently during the news. He teased you before the newscast, perhaps what his favorite holiday gift was sports-related. And Dan, please let us know.
Got to pay off the tease. But this one has stayed with me because, A, it was an experience, and, B, was just kind of like it totally caught me off guard. A lot of times you kind of, even as a kid, you have some kind of idea of...
An inkling
of, you know, what's coming. This one caught me off guard. Christmas of 2003, I got tickets to the Cubs convention. So, you know, obviously Cubs coming off a division title.
Right.
They had just traded for Derek Lee. I met Derek Lee. The only time I ever met Ronnie. It was, you know, ran into Stoney and Woody and Matt Clement in the hallway and met Joe Borowski. So if you, at that point in my life, that fever pitch of Cub fandom, it hit me in the right place, and obviously it kind of stayed with me for years.
I love it.
That's good.
Cubs convention, and, you know, and it's great, and you know, it's amazing, and you know, Brian Campbell, who we just had on, gets it. You meet an athlete once. You said that's the only time you met Sano, right? It's amazing. You know, you'll meet an athlete once, and it could be for 4 minutes. It could be for like, you know, half an hour, but you'll remember. I remember meeting guys when I was like 8 or 9, and you know the wonderful. I met more great guys than I did, you know, bad guys. But
me
you
too.
You remember it forever.
The first brush with athlete greatness that I experienced was Jim Osborne,
number 68,
former Bears defensive lineman, who interestingly enough was speaking at my grade school. I met him, and he happened at that time. These guys had jobs.
They all had to.
He happened to be an accountant. And my dad...
Funny, he didn't look Jewish.
...is a CPA.
Oh, how cool is that?
Jim Osborne, and this is no lie, hand on a Bible, came to our house to talk to my dad about accounting.
That's awesome.
Here's Jim Osborne sitting in my living room.
That's great. Did he wear his jersey?
He did not, unfortunately. That would have been really cool.
Yeah. My accountant's Tony Kirk, by the way. I don't have a story. I just know that if he's listening, he'll like hearing his name.
He just wants to make sure his name gets
My father-in-law gave me, you know, and this is like after years and years of sports presence, my father-in-law got me for Christmas morning, because they're not members of the tribe.
Okay.
But, you know, hey, who am I to judge? So my father-in-law got me a Zamboni sweatshirt.
Nice.
And on the front is the Zamboni logo, and on the back are the 6 original Zambonis that were with the original 6 hockey teams when they first made Zambonis. How great is that?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really a cool sweatshirt.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
All right, Dan, thanks. Appreciate that. That's good stuff. I mean, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, strong. So text or call in. But we've got another story that Andy found that is this guy destroyed the Cubs. This guy kept the Cubs from going to the playoffs. This guy was his battles with substance abuse were legendary, and his victory. You know, you never beat it. You're just in recovery.
Yeah.
But he has helped many other people since he has gotten clean and sober.
I would say this segment probably is rated MA for mature audiences. So if you have a youngster, an impressionable youngster, I would warn you that we're going to get into a subject that's a little bit more mature.
Right. So Mrs. Powell, you might want to have KP leave the room.
Exactly. So Daryl Strawberry, of course, of the Mets, as we talked about. There's a story that came out a couple of days ago in the New York Post, and it's after Daryl Strawberry appeared on the Dr. Oz show. Now, I'll read it right from the Post article here. It says that he couldn't have scored without them. Horn dog Mets legend Daryl Strawberry.
Great start.
Just revealed Thursday that he used to round the bases with groupies, even between innings during games, with the help of teammates and coaches. The 8-time All-Star told Dr. Oz that he would enlist locker room attendants to fetch, and I'm quoting here again, frisky female fans from the stands, and then had some fun with them, I guess, in the clubhouse in between innings.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm naive. All right. Now, I have no doubt that a guy like Daryl Strawberry could walk into a bar or have, met people and have them meet him on the road. I know that happens. Not all baseball players do that.
No.
But players during a game,
all right, so
maybe coaches, no way.
So Dr. Oz asked him, and this is a quote from the question: "You actually, in the middle of games, were so addicted to sex that you would actually go out and have sex between innings?" Strawberry answered, "Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was a pretty crazy lifestyle. You know, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, that's just the addiction, the drive." Former teammates reached for comment, could not recall witnessing these deeds. But again, he goes on to say that truly did happen.
I know some people that battle sex addiction. Mm-hmm. It is a thing. It's quite serious.
Yes, it is.
And people will lose jobs over it, will lose marriages over it. It is, it's like alcohol, it's like drugs. It's it's a horrible dependency that you really can't control. You have to focus on controlling. I just can't believe that teammates, and especially coaches, would be like, "Okay, Daryl, we just got the third out. You're up seventh this inning. Go for it." And now you got Andy Frains involved. Andy Frains will talk.
Oh, my God.
Andy Frains will go to the first, New York newspaper that comes by with a 20-buck, offer.
Yeah. The 80s were a little different in baseball than they are, say, now. I had heard of guys going into the clubhouse, especially closers would take a nap in the game.
Right.
Because they weren't going to be used right away, or guys would go in and crush the spread, or there had been certain guys, and, Mark Burley, one of those
When you say
guys,
crush the spread, you're referring to the food.
Yeah,
yes.
The food.
Okay.
And there are guys like Mark Burley, who even came out and admitted that, had a couple of beers, rally beers during a game,
and wound up
having to get into a game, but that's, interesting.
He was very generous with his beers after the game.
Yes.
That's all I'll say.
So that's, that kind of stuff I've heard of happening.
But not
to this extent.
I just find that, and I believe a lot, but there's a bunch of kids outside the WGN studios on Michigan Avenue, so let's be careful.
Yeah.
But and I'm talking to myself when I say that, because you're a trained professional. I'm just a goof. There's no way that a teammate, ball players, some guys grow up with like this aura around them. Other guys are like, you're a can't miss prospect. Other guys struggle their whole life just to get that one chance at the mm-hmm. bigs. There's no way that they would let a teammate, go have relations in some part of the clubhouse or some secret room. that wouldn't, you know, I believe that when Albert Bell had his bat corked, that somebody snuck back there and went, you know, crawled through the
Jason Grimsley.
Yeah, and went, look at you. That's awesome. Look at you. And players would, like, you know, slip open the tile of a roof and go, you know, to the umpire's room and steal the bat and bring it back. I believe that stuff happened.
That kind of stuff happens.
But there's no way that players would let it happen, especially coaches.
No, I know.
What coach is going to say, go ahead, Straw?
Yeah.
Go ahead. She looks like she could be, you know, 4 minutes.
Yeah, just make sure you're ready for your bat. We need you to hit a homer.
Yeah.
Out here.
Yeah. I mean, the, you know, coach doesn't want to have to yell slide too many times between innings.
You know, it's funny you brought up, too, and it just got my mind thinking a little bit here, but you said, you know, certain guys just die for that one chance to get out there. There was a story, I can't remember where I saw it. I think it might have been in either Bleacher Report or something, but it was about a former Cub who had literally a cup of coffee with the team in 2006. And reading it, I could not help but remember this circumstance. The guy's name he was a left-handed pitcher by the name of Ryan O'Malley, a Michigan kid who actually played at Michigan with Rich Hill, who was on that 2006 Cubs team as well.
Okay, I remember Rich Hill for the Cubs.
So Ryan O'Malley was pitching for AAA, the Des Moines, the Iowa Cubs. The Cubs are in Houston, and Rich Hill was scheduled to pitch the final game of the series, but the Saturday game went 18 innings, and Rich Hill was forced to come in and pitch the final two innings of the 18-inning game. So Ryan O'Malley gets the call to the big leagues because Iowa is playing at Round Rock, which is just down the road from Houston.
The Astros are a minor league team.
So he gets in a limo, takes a limo to Minute Maid Park, gets out of the limo, goes into the Cubs clubhouse, has his little meeting with Larry Rothschild, who's the pitching coach, Michael Barrett, who ended up catching him. The kid goes 8 1/3, and the Cubs win 1-0. It was a miraculous pitching performance. This is a kid that was never on anybody's radar. He was not the kind of left-hander that had a devastating curveball. He didn't have a great changeup. He just had decent stuff and threw strikes. So he figures that's the end. You know, he's gonna get dressed, and he's done. Jimmy Bank, who was the traveling secretary at the time, came up to him and gave him his envelope for his per diem money, which indicated to him that he's getting on the plane. He's going back to Chicago. They got a series coming up against the Phillies and the Cardinals. So he gets to Wrigley Field, and he's pitching, and he throws a pitch in the fourth or the fifth inning of his second major league start and feels something weird in his elbow. And his elbow popped, and that was the last chance he got to pitch in the big leagues. He was never really called upon again. And that story got me thinking about another story that I witnessed with the Cubs. That was Adam Greenberg.
We've had him on the show, and that's a terrible, terrible story.
So for those that don't remember, Adam Greenberg was a young guy, a smaller, diminutive kind of an outfielder that got a chance with the Cubs in 05, came up and literally saw one pitch and never really saw the one pitch. Raniel Pinto, I believe it was, hit him in the head.
Playing in Miami against the Marlins, first pitch he ever saw.
Hit him in the head.
And he was out.
And he was done. And basically, concussion symptoms followed him around for a year or so.
I think the Marlins brought him back for like two at-bats.
The Marlins brought him back, and then he had latched on with the Royals, because I remember seeing him in spring training with the Royals and going over and having a little conversation with him. Because he and Matt Merton came up at the same time.
That's one of my favorite Hughes names. Matt Merton.
So those two guys came up at the same time.
Do you remember the only thing crazier than the Adam Greenberg thing was the Yankees outfielder?
Oh, yeah. Fowler.
Right. Fowler, this past season, who was due to lead off the second inning, and in the bottom of the first, playing right field for the Yankees, he went for a foul ball, and there was like something that was supposed to like have been brought down mechanically from, you know, I don't know if it like holds baseballs or what. I'm not even sure what the device was.
Something was sticking up by the wall.
Something was sticking up that should have been brought down after the third out, and it malfunctioned. And the kid like ran into it, or was, you know, ran around it, and he ripped tendons, and he was done.
Yep.
Never even got to bat. He's since been traded to Oakland.
And he's suing the White Sox. I just saw that story come up the other day. I was at the game.
Oh, were you?
And it was interesting because from where I was sitting, you couldn't see what happened. And he ran into the wall, and next thing you know, stretchers and ambulances are coming out. And he was done, but then he got traded.
I've always had a fondness for right fielders because when I was in Little League, you know, that was where I went. I was so good in Little League. They put a rule in for me. Every kid gets to play the last two innings.
Nice.
And right field.
You're the closer.
Yeah. Right field, your right fielder in Major League Baseball might be like one of the greatest athletes in the world. He's got the best arm. Yep. He's got, incredible strength. He's speedy. Little League, it's the guy who, brought the snack.
Mm-hmm. Can count the number of dandelions on the grass.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Les Nessman, man.
The one that knows everybody's baseball jersey number.
Right. So Daryl Strawberry claims he was having sex during games, and his teammates were covering for him.
Mm-hmm. But again, when reached for comment, not many of them could recollect the circumstances.
I know of, and I won't mention a name here, but I know of an American League pitcher that was told, they figured out that the guy was so nervous, but when he would partake in cannabis, he would be relaxed. And he was encouraged by his team to partake on the nights he was a starting pitcher.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, without wanting to bust anybody, and also I don't have proof. I've got two different sources that told me, but I don't have proof. So, the guy is no longer pitching. But I believe that story. Two different people that would know told me that story. I believe that. There's no way this happened.
Yeah, I don't think it happened either.
Daryl.
But it's great fodder for us, and the New York Post probably sold a lot of papers.
Hell yeah, they did.
The New York Post is worth the read.
It's an app that you need to have on your phone.
Yeah, it's worth the read. If you're not reading the Chicago Tribune, which of course you should be.
Yeah,
that's another one.
I still get the paper delivered.
Yeah, it's a tradition. I mean, there's something about the ink on your fingers and just the paper.
My younger friends, the guy who produced for us for years over at the other stations, Zetterman, would laugh at me. What do you mean you take the paper out of the plastic? Tell me a story about FDR. Nothing to do with FDR. If you're not reading the paper, you're missing all the little articles, all the pictures.
The weird thing about the Post is it's kind of like a rag.
It's a tabloid.
Right? Yeah. But but Joel Sherman writes for them, and he's like a nationally
respected baseball guy. Yeah. I mean, it's like the crazy headlines are always in the Post.
And they've also got that Page 6. Page 6 is like some of the crazy stories that people will talk about at parties and in bars and stuff like that. And, it's sometimes news sucks and sometimes sports is depressing. And that's where a Page 6 will come into play.
We'll make your day.
And if you're a Mets fan right now, what's more interesting? Talking about Sandy Alderson coming back or Strawberry says he used to have sex?
Exactly right.
Games.
So, yeah. So well, we're doing the Mets fans out there a service. All right, we're going to take a quick timeout. Let me get you updated real quick, too. There's one NFL game going on right now and another one set to go shortly. Ravens lead the Colts 16-10. They're in the third. And tonight it'll be the Packers hosting the Vikings.
Wow. Vikings play the Bears next week.
Yep.
And if the Eagles should lose one of the next two games and the Vikings win out, they're going to have home field for the Super Bowl. That's never happened.
No.
The 49ers played at Palo Alto, which
is close. Right.
But no NFL team has ever played in a Super Bowl game in their home stadium. I mean, can you imagine if the Vikings need that game, what that final score might be?
It might be like the old Bears-Lindy Infante game. They're 61-7.
Lindy Infante?
Yeah.
Do we just get a Lindy Infante reference?
He certainly did. Hey, there's Chicago, and they're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Bogner. And you can get Real in the Morning and WGN TV Morning News. Weekdays, 4 to 10. More of the Beat coming up here in just a moment, 720 WGN.
Perry! That one registered 3.8. Another Super Bowl record, the first refrigerator to score.
720 WGN. The Beat continues for another minute and a half or so. Then Blackhawks hockey, Andy Mazur and Harry Tynowitz.
Mark Kerman and I will be working Christmas night. If you're looking for something fun to do, 9 to 11, Jews on Christmas, right here on WGN 9 to 11.
And that voice you heard there during the highlight of Super Bowl 20, Dick Enberg, the legendary sportscaster who spans 60 years in his television career, passed away yesterday morning, the day before, a little after midnight, apparently, from an apparent heart attack.
Great announcer, 28 Wimbledons, called the greatest game ever, college basketball, Final Four guy. And Andy, when you were the voice of the Padres,
yeah, I got
you
to meet
worked
him.
With him.
I got to work with him. Actually filled in for him for quite some time during the 2012 season. He was cutting back a little bit on his travel And I got to do some TV games there, but it was really weird. The first time I met him, I walked up into the conference room, and he had been listening to, because he lived in San Diego, he'd been listening to some of my basketball broadcasts that I was doing for the University of San Diego. And he was so complimentary. And I'm thinking to myself, Dick Enberg just told me I'm doing a really good job doing basketball play-by-play. I'm like, pinch, hello, pinch, pinch. But yeah, a legend, and it's a shame. And you knew it was a big game if you heard his voice.
Yeah, and he hosted a game show when I was a little kid, Sports Challenge.
Yep, that's it.
And it'd be like three guys that played on the same team, and it could have been like three guys from a team like from the 70s against three guys from the 60s against three guys from the 80s. You know, obviously it was earlier, but that was a cool show.